Glad you're with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. We're going to talk about a ripoff straight ahead. Our websites are clark.com and clarkdeals.com. And the number of Americans that want coronavirus tests has gone way up in the last 2 weeks. And that's because, well, the number of people who have coronavirus has gone way up, and people are getting tested more frequently, and there's spot shortages and being able to get tested in different places around the United States. Well, the Congress back in the late winter, very beginning of spring, I forget when, I think it was in March, adopted rules that were supposed to make coronavirus testing free, whether you have insurance or not. Unfortunately, and we've only had one complaint of this on our show, and I've also done a TV story on this, where people are getting hit with bill shock, being billed, in the case I did my TV story about, being billed over $1,000 for a coronavirus test. And I heard from someone just recently in the neighborhood when I was out for a walk that they were billed $1,100 for a coronavirus test. So the scoop is, when you go to get tested, just because they don't ask for money right then and there, you need to take a moment to read what it is they're having you sign to see if you are subject to billing for the test that you have received. The percent of people that are being billed is just several percent, not a huge number, but who has an extra $1,000 to throw away? The easiest way to get a test that won't have bill shock with it is if there is a county test, which is what it is in many places in the country, where there'll be free testing available at a county public health facility, or they'll use a public school parking lot or something like that, where you can get a test for free. As to where you would find that out, according to the New York Times, in most states, you would be able to find free testing at government facilities by going to a state health department website for your state. And usually there will be a clickable button there that you search by zip code to find out what the fee would be, if there is any. Typically none, as it's supposed to be. Now, one of the tricks of the trade apparently is to tell you that the test is free, but then charge you a fee for the facility where the test is being given. One person was billed recently $1,684 for the facility fee, even though the test itself technically was free. So know that this is an area where people desperate to find out if they are sick or well are then being abused by the facility, and you want to know before you take the test that you are, in fact, A-okay, not having to worry about a bill, because it's enough to worry about dealing with coronavirus. It's time for your questions you posted for me at clark.com/ask. Producers Kim and Joel take turns. And Kim, what's up?
All right. Today's first question is from Mike in Illinois. And Mike says, we're getting ready to renew our auto and home insurance, and the company that we usually work with is now offering home cyber protection as part of their coverage. Do you have an opinion of this type of coverage? I requested a quote, but they haven't gotten back to me in writing yet.
The quote, typically, if you add this to most often, it would be a homeowner's insurance policy, but I guess there would be rare cases you could add this to auto, is usually about $50 a year. Can be as little as $2 a month, or can be as much as maybe $80, $100 a year. And with most insurers, that will be per covered individual in a house, not per household. So let's say you have a homeowner's insurance premium of X dollars and you have two people in the house, you would pay the cyber coverage times two. One person in the house, X1, three people in the house, X3. So that's just kind of how it works. In no case is it crazy expensive. What it covers for you is the cost of dealing with ransomware and other aspects of a data breach, kind of like a light version of what I recommend that businesses have to protect themselves from hackers and ransomware specialists. One thing that you want to ask your insurer is, does a claim against the cyber coverage count as a claim that would be posted on the reports that insurance companies post that is a posting of claims? And what goes on your CLUE report can poison your ability to shop for insurance in the future and can potentially lead for an increase in premium on the policy you have for your home. So you want to make sure that this coverage for cyber insurance does not count as a claim that would go on the CLUE report if you did have a hack that attacked you, your equipment, and computers in your home. Joel?
Clark Lynn in Oregon says, I want to consolidate some IRA accounts and was about to move a significant portion of my portfolio to Schwab. I just read that Schwab and Ameritrade merged. From my research, this isn't news, but apparently it's recently finalized. Do you have any concerns about this? And what are the implications for me if I'm bringing all my funds into Schwab at this point in time? By the way, I'm 64, so I'm close to retirement.
You're a Beatles song now, which Joel and Kim are too young to know that reference. Anyway, as far as you moving money to Schwab, normally when there's a merger of two big organizations like this, there will be enormous customer no service problems for a while, integrating computer systems and the like. We have to date heard zero complaints about customer no service issues from this merger. So it's really a takeover by Schwab. So I would feel comfortable going to Schwab. This is one that has a net negative in terms of overall competition in the brokerage industry, but a net positive for customers of either of these institutions coming together. So I don't think there should be any hesitation on your part about moving your accounts to Schwab. And it'll feel much better having all those IRAs together instead of dealing with IRAs from different institutions. Kim?
Simon in Florida says, we live in South Florida and we need window protection from hurricanes. Should we go with impact windows or accordion shutters? Impact windows seem to be 3 to 4 times more expensive than shutters. However, they save on energy costs and are more appealing. Which would be a better return of investment?
You'll never make up the energy costs. I have had to make this decision before, when I had the privilege of having an oceanfront condo, and we had to decide between what a lot of our neighbors had done with the accordion shutters. Other neighbors went with the impact glass. We decided, for really appearance reasons, to go with the impact glass, even though that was a significantly more expensive choice. So it is really a lifestyle thing. Do you like the look so much more that it's worth spending the extra money? The advantage of the accordions are obviously they're cheaper. The disadvantage is that if you only are at this property part-time, you would have to either get somebody to lower your shutters, or you yourself would have to go into the condo at the time that a storm's approaching and lower the shutters, then later when the storm passes, having to raise them again. So that's really your choice. Some people have ultra fancy ones that apparently you can activate electronically, although I don't know how reliable those are in a storm situation. Joel?
Clark Armand in Georgia says, I wanted to follow up on your recommendation to landlords to use Cozy.co for rent payments. As a renter, I've been paying my rent through Cozy for the past year, and they now share my timely payments with the credit bureaus, which has led to a nice little increase in my FICO score. So I just wanted to let you know how Cozy.co benefits the renter side as well.
Well, I appreciate that because I had not heard that they were doing the reporting of rent, and that's great that it helped with your credit score. And Joel, do you use Cozy for your tenants, or how are you collecting rent these days?
No, I still do it through, you know, either Venmo or Cash App, but if, you know, I really have, it's just been laziness. I need to switch over to Cozy.
And the cost to you as a landlord?
$0.
All right. Kim?
Marilyn in North Carolina says, I received a card from Sam's Club this week saying, good news, your membership will be automatically renewed on 12/6/20. We'll use the card on file to process the payment of $45. Clark, this really concerns me. How many other companies can charge my card without technically getting my permission?
Okay, wonderful question. And the warehouse clubs all try to get you to sign up for auto-renew. Their renewal rate when they do auto-renew is essentially 100%. When they rely on people to renew themselves, the renewal rate drops to somewhere between 80 and 90%. And so they, at the time of the last renewal, may have said, in something with the terms and conditions of you paying the renewal, you may have unknowingly agreed to auto-renew your membership with Sam's Club. And if this is something you want to undo, sign into your membership portal at Sam's Club and take it off auto-renew. As a practical matter, I don't like auto-renewals, specifically because they get us to pay for things that maybe we've long since stopped using or forgotten about, and I'd rather have to make a decision once each year to continue with a service provider. Kendra is with us on the Clark Howard Show, and Kendra, all the things that tell you you can make $1 zillion flipping a home, you're not quite there, are you?
No, not quite there yet.
So what's happened in your situation?
I purchased this property, you know, as an investment opportunity. Felt like things were going kind of well at first. And I think I just got myself in a bad situation with a contractor where I paid him too much money up front and ended up having to fire him because
sorry.
The timeline was just, he wasn't working. So now as I get to the end of the project, I'm starting to realize that, you know, we're definitely going to be over budget. So I'm starting to rethink my exit strategy. You know, in February, I would have the opportunity to cash out and refinance if I decided to rent the home. Or do I just, you know, take the loss and just chalk it up to I pretty much paid for my education and move on down the road?
All right. Well, let's talk practical choices here. So if you say, you know what, I'm just going to cut my losses, I'm out. How much would you expect that you would lose on this?
Worst case scenario, $10,000 to $15,000 is what I'm looking at, depending on if the market just kind of holds strong and I can get the sell price that I'm looking for. But I would say at probably around 10.
Okay. So the alternative of turning it into a rental property, how long are you willing to be a landlord? Are you thinking you would be a landlord?
2 years. I mean, I haven't.
Oh, if it's short term, odds are you're better off just cutting your losses, selling it and being done.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you start trying to make that decision between being a landlord or just getting out and taking your lumps from the deal, you got to think of being a landlord as a longer term play than just a couple of years. We don't know what the housing market's going to do over the next couple of years.
Right.
So that would not really be a viable option. I even get to the next question, which was, if you said you'd be a landlord for a long time, how do those numbers look? So the fact that you have no joy about being a landlord means you just bail and you just sell it. And as far as it being a life lesson or whatever, don't feel that way about it. You know, you ended up with a bad contractor who ripped you off, cost you a lot of money, took the ability to make a profit out of the deal out of the equation. Those things happen, and don't beat yourself up about it. But taking the loss in your case seems like the least harmful course of action from here. It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you being empowered with knowledge so you can keep more of what you have. Our websites, clark.com and clarkdeals.com. So what is for life? When something is available to you for life, free for life, whatever, what does that actually mean? Well, it means less usually than what you might think. If you're not paying for whatever it is not an open-ended, committed contract. And that's what people are finding out and are not happy about with Google Photos. Google Photos, when they launched unlimited for life free storage 5 years ago, bandied about how this would be something that would be free forever. They were never going to charge for it. Well, never ended after 5 years. Google has announced that going forward, you will have an allowance of free storage for photos. And then from that point forward, you will either have to delete pictures or you'll have to sign up for a Google data storage membership, kind of like what Apple does, and there are others who have data storage things. So you'll have to make that decision. But I want to tell you, it's not as bad as has been reported in the brief dispatches you may have heard on radio or seen on TV or whatever. The way this works is that your pictures that you have put in Google Photos all the way through May of next year, you will still have unlimited for life free storage of those pictures. The meter starts running in June of next year. So when we hit June, you will have a data cap that will exist for storing pictures. And Google says that the average person will go over that cap in 2024, that the amount of pictures that people store, they will continue to be free for three more years. People that are pictureaholics, it'll hit earlier. People who take pictures sparingly will go potentially past 24. So it is a change, and it's something that we've gotten used to. Those of us who use Google Photos on an iPhone or an Android, having the ability to have the unlimited storage, but they ended up with unbelievable numbers of pictures that people were storing, and they were finally like, yeah, this isn't working for us. And so that's why moving forward, you're going to face a limit. Now, they offered the lamest way for you to avoid the limit. And it's if you will buy Pixel phones now and moving forward, that's Google's cell phone, that then you're not subject to the data cap, but or data limit, but anybody else with any other kind of phone, you have the limit. So not that many people are going to buy Pixel phones is a way to get around this. So there is something that requires a little bit of work but would get you around it. And that is when you start getting to a point where you're running out of storage, you can do a data dump to your laptop or to a hard drive and store your pictures locally that would take you over the data cap. And that way you would still have the space available. And Google's happy for you to do it. They just don't want to keep storing on their drives, on their server farms, what you could have on your own hard drive or portable drive. And then the other thing is there's a sneaky workaround where you have different Gmail addresses, and that would give you the ability to have more data available to you. If you change where the pictures go on your phone, that would be another way for you to get more space. It's time for your questions you posted for me at clark.com/ask. Producers Kim and Joel take turns. And whose turn is it?
Clark, it's mine, and Gary in Florida has a question. And so he says, I was wondering if you think the 4% retirement rule or guideline is still accurate. And if so, with what portfolio mix of stocks and bonds and potentially annuities do you think would be appropriate to use with that?
Wonderful question. And there's been a lot of debate recently if the 4% rule is still an accurate number. And by the way, the guy who came up with it, it was just like a back of the envelope thing, not like a rule that came down from up above or anything. So the idea is that if you have a well-diversified portfolio in retirement, which means that you still have a substantial amount of your money still invested in stock type choices through funds or index funds or whatever, that you can safely withdraw 4% of your money each year and not worry about running out of money or having inflation erode your living standards too much over the years. It's not 100% certain that 4% would work. The people who go into retirement right before there's a big stock market crash are going to find that their retirement's going to be more difficult financially. But the 4% rule is still respected, although there are people who say it can be higher than that, more like 5%. There are others who say it needs to be lower, somewhere like 3.5%. But the idea still holds as a sound concept, not a firm rule. Kim?
Nancy in Tennessee wants to know, Clark, do you know anything about mesh internet?
Yeah, so wireless mesh is something that is a great way to improve the quality and reliability of Wi-Fi in your home. So what happens with mesh is instead of you having a router and then having maybe repeaters, what you do is you have these devices that talk to each other, and the cost of mesh Wi-Fi has gone down to where the cheapest systems that will cover a typical size home now around $100, where just a few years ago you were looking at $600 minimum. They vary in sophistication. They're sold at not just electronic sellers, but they're sold at the warehouse clubs, general discount stores. Best Buy is a big seller of them. And so these systems work beautifully for a typical home. You have to get into a really ginormous home before you get to a point where a wireless mesh system will not dramatically improve the reliability of your Wi-Fi. Joel?
Clark, John in Kansas says, my wife and I are both retired. We recently started doing food deliveries for a popular app on a part-time basis. I figured I should tell my auto insurance company so they could make any necessary adjustments. They told me today that while doing these food deliveries, we were not coverable. That shocks me. So what do we do?
This is so frustrating. The insurance industry has so much trouble responding to changes in the marketplace. And it varies by auto insurer, how they treat people driving for Lyft or Uber, how they treat people working any gig job where they're using their vehicle in that job, where they treat it as a kind of semi-commercial purpose for that period of time. So a forward-thinking auto insurer will have some kind of additional rider or coverage that you add to your regular auto insurance coverage. In addition, many of the apps, many of the gig working things where you are using your own vehicle have coverage that they make available to you that steps in where your own automobile insurance doesn't cover you. So that would be the most important thing for you to do if you don't want to switch auto insurers, is to see if the particular food delivery app you're working for does offer you coverage, since your own automobile insurer doesn't. If they don't, then you need to look at another food delivery app or another till you find one that steps in to cover that opening, that gap that's left by your own automobile insurer. Kim?
Chris in California says, I currently work as a school teacher and I've been putting several hundred dollars a month into a 403B. The school hosts annual meetings for these things and they guide us into the 403B plan. But should I be putting my money into a Roth IRA instead? Also, am I able to switch the money that I now have in my 403B to a Roth IRA? I have 20 years of teaching to go, so there's still plenty of time to make better financial choices.
So thank you so much for asking these questions. And I want to also have you look at a forum at 403BWise. Let me repeat that. It's 403BWise, which is a website and information source. It's 403BWise.org that is all about teaching what you need to know to figure out if you are in a ripoff 403B or not. If the school district is organizing something with these friendly people who show up and talk up the advantages of their 403B, odds are near 100% that you're getting ripped off in that 403B with massive fees and commissions and what are known as surrender charges. So your first saving for retirement should 100% be in a Roth IRA with a low-cost company. You can put up to $6,000 a year in that, up to your 50 years old, in which case you can do $7,000. And that is much smarter savings for retirement than almost any 403B, because almost all of them are garbage. If you go check out 403BWise.org, they'll walk you through how they have a whole section on how to get out of your existing 403B, how to know whether you're going to have really high fees getting out of it, and then where you can put it. In your case, it would not be a Roth. It would be a traditional IRA would be where you'd move the money. So this is an area that I hope ultimately Congress will fix. Why we're ripping off teachers and those who work at nonprofits and work at hospitals is way beyond me. Jason joins us on the Clark Howard Show. And Jason, you are like a postgraduate student and being a big-time saver.
Well, thanks, Clark. Good talking to you.
Well, good to have you here. Where did you get this desire to be a big-time saver?
Listening to your show, talking to people that are older than I am and have been saving towards retirement and reading online.
Well, wherever the motivations have come from, it gives you so much control over your future that you're living on substantially less than what you make and trying to figure out every place you can stash money. So where are you with that, and how might I be able to guide you or help you?
Yeah, currently I self-fund and max out a Roth IRA with one of your recommended low-cost companies. And I have additional money that I'd like to put towards my retirement. And my employer offers a pension that allows me to contribute additional money too, which would increase my monthly payments in retirement. However, if I make additional contributions, there's no tax advantage to that. My employer also offers a 457B. There's no employer matching. But I just looked up the net expenses on that, and it's 0.79%.
Whoa!
So, Yeah, it's pretty high. So my question is, would I be better off taking my extra money and putting it into a non-tax advantage additional pension contribution, or taking advantage of the pre-tax advantage the 457B offers, even though the net expenses are high?
So I'm going to give you a third option that's going to be crazy, okay? What if you instead opened an investment account where the money would not be specifically limited to being used for retirement, and you went into a zero-cost fund like the Fidelity Zeros, where instead of worrying about an expense ratio of almost 0.8, you would have zero cost for putting your money in, and you the tax you pay down the road when you'd want the money is much more favorable, known as long-term capital gains, which is a very favorable tax rate. So you would give up the upfront tax benefit you'd have putting money in the 457. You would give up putting money in the pension, but it would be a much more flexible thing. And because of the fact that you have no costs involved with it compared to these other options, I know it's weird, but Jason, that's what I would do. Which company do you have your Roth IRA at?
Vanguard.
Okay, and Vanguard's a great company. I mean, you could do the same thing I'm talking about at Vanguard, but instead of it being straight out free like Fidelity, you would pay essentially free, like 0.03% or 0.05%. And maybe just for simplicity's sake, having a Vanguard investment account in like a total stock market index fund or an international index fund or something like that, where you just let that money grow extremely tax advantaged over the years, and you only pay on your gains, but only at the favorable capital gains tax rate. I know it's weird to say to give up the sheltering, but I think over the long haul, that would be a better plan if it were me. And I just love it that you're so into saving money. And I hate it that that 457 plan gouges people with those massive expenses. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.